The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
When we last left Jonah, he was just about to begin his training with Mr. Alistair, while completely unaware that Maggie hangs in deep peril. And as Mr. Alistair predicted, the Order has not sat around playing tiddlywinks while waiting for him or the other members of the Sacred Dawn to make their move. Are they the reason Jonah is hearing mysterious voices again? Or is there something more at play? It's now time for the usual warnings of possible graphic violence, child endangerment, and naughty, salty language. Which I noticed to my great disappointment was sadly lacking in the last chapter. Now, let us grab our tentacles and rejoin the fray in chapter 16, Eius de Lection.
The Lady Cassandra stepped back through the mirror where Nicole waited with the De Libro Ataman de Loribus open in front of her. With an evil grin, Cassandra tossed a chunk of flesh onto its pages, making a squishy-like noise. It rolled down them, staining them as it did so.
It seems your father's mission wasn't a complete failure.
Oh, then? Nicole said, raising an eyebrow.
Yes, that's from where he bit him. There should be enough for you to use.
Agreed, Mother, she said as she stared at it. To her surprise, it still looked fresh, although it had been over 3 days since the encounter with the boy.
Well, that shouldn't matter, she told herself.
No tool of Adone was strong enough to reflect her will or her magic. With her eyes becoming pitch black, she shed the form of Maggie and reverted to her true state. Her skin was now almost translucent, yet somehow scaly. Her face was drawn and twisted. Her mouth was more like a circle, worm-like with purplish black lips that encapsulated rows of teeth, similar to the ones her father had at the end of each tentacle. She took out a crystal orb and placed it on the table, raising her claw-like hands into the air as a dark, miasmic glow filled the room, surrounding the crystal and the chunk of flesh as they floated into the air. Cassandra smiled as she watched Nicole liquefy the tissues. Now, raising her own bony, spider-like fingers, she spoke in an ancient tongue.
Ekles mna morna, ja mak leton. Ekles la morna, ja mak leton.
A hole opened up in the middle of the orb, as if opening into another space. As it did so, Nicole pushed the liquefied flesh into the hollowed center and sealed it off. With that, the orb began to pulse and radiate a strange color.
Ekles la morna, la mekleton.
Ekles la morna, la mekleton.
They spoke together. Nicole's eyes went wide as she began to look into the orb. Images began to form in her mind as she was able to locate the boy's spiritual energy. She passed through two large hickory doors and into the main floor of the cafe. Everything was like a silhouette, as if static had formed into images to allow her to see the stairs, the bar, and the boy. To her surprise, he was downstairs already and away from the others.
This is going to be easier then. Oh, who's this?
A voice came out of nowhere.
Jonah, it seems we have an unwelcome guest. Would you please excuse me?
An incredible dread lit inside Nicole as a strange beam of light now stood in front of her. Was this the fox angel her father had spoken of? She tried to withdraw, but whatever it was, whoever it was held her in place with ease. Mr. Alistair was true to his word, and the next 3 days were an onslaught of demonstrations. On that very first morning, Jonah hadn't even stepped onto the grass field when a fireball came racing at his head. Jonah dodged it, and Mr. Alistair stood there smiling, holding another one in his hand as if it was a baseball.
Are you crazy?
Jonah complained, but Mr. Alistair answered with another blast.
No, young master. I am playing demon. One who is not so transfixed by your gifts. Not all of us are lured in so easily.
The blast landed behind Jonah, and Alistair growled, "Now, take off that bandage. You'll need to learn to use the power of the things you've eaten."
"Use?"
"Yes, use. The way I make fireballs from, in this case, the energy of creation. Energy from the very words that Aldone spoke at the beginning of all."
Jonah frowned and slowly unwrapped his arms, revealing the midnight black arm underneath.
Alistair could see the energy pulsing through it, almost as if the very stars were swirling in it. "There are two ways for you to use the energy that flows inside of you."
"Inside of me? I thought it was due to the cross embedded in my palm."
"That cross is a seal, keeping what you've eaten from reforming. It was placed there because you were too young to handle exactly what and who you are. So when you accidentally ate the demon Silene, you also consumed its energy. Now, by tapping into it, you can cast spells or expel energy. However, using that, especially untrained, is like unleashing a wildfire."
"Oh." He seemed both reassured and disappointed by the statement.
"You said there are two ways. What's the second?"
"You can pull the very electricity that flows through the air and focus it into a tremendous charge or burst."
"Is that what you're doing?"
"No. As I said, I'm using the energy of creation."
He then showed Jonah his hand. It was blistered.
"Unfortunately, because I made bad choices, it has an adverse effect,"
Alistair replied.
"Isn't there another way?"
Uncomfortable with the idea that Alistair was actually hurting himself in order to train him.
"Yes," Alistair acknowledged. "I could use my own life force. It returns me temporarily to my former state. Here, allow me to show you."
A dark glow began to surround Mr. Alistair, and Jonah could hear the sound of flesh tearing as wings and horns formed from where his stumps were now. As Mr. Alistair transformed, he let out a terrible roar, making Jonah's skin go cold. He smiled as the black wisp of energy swirled around him, and he sent back a different type of fireball towards Jonah. This one was black and red, crackling like a hot burning log. Instinctively, Jonah raised his hand and caught the ball of energy. It danced and sparkled in his palm.
"Now," Mr. Alistair commanded, "aim it back at me."
Jonah did so, and as it flew back, it took on an eerie purple. Alistair stepped aside, and both watched it explode in the air as a powerful wind blew back towards them. Alistair, pleased with the results, returned to his reformed state, shrinking in size as well.
"Now I want you to concentrate on the energy in that left arm of yours."
Jonah did so. A deep pulse ran through him, and the energy began to coalesce inside his left forearm. His eyes widened as it almost looked as if his arm was now on fire.
"That's good. Now, shoot it at me,"
Mr. Alistair commanded. Jonah extended his left arm, and like a bolt of lightning, the energy shot forth. Alistair went to step aside a second time, and the pulse arced, slamming into him, sending him flying a good 100 feet.
"Shit!"
Jonah cried out, concerned he had accidentally killed his instructor. Alistair just laughed as he got back up, a smoldering burn mark seared into his chest.
"Good, good. Now we can really begin to train."
Jonah braced himself for the demon's next attack, but instead he sped towards him.
"Oh shit!"
Jonah exclaimed, but Alistair did not attack. Instead he said,
"Your physical body is weak. We will now train until you can keep up with me. Until you do, you will not use your gifts again."
From his bedroom window, Terrence watched as the two began trading blasts of energy. He laughed to himself as he watched a surprised look form on the boy's face as Mr. Alistair turned the training from one of spiritual to one of physical strength and agility training. This is where Jonah was the weakest, physical attacks. It was something he and Mr. Alistair had discussed just before they went out to the fields. "Remember," Terrence said to Mr. Alistair, "he's just a child, an injured child."
I am well aware, Mr. White, but the Order doesn't care and I can't afford to.
Alistair replied.
His natural gifts will have to help with the healing process.
As Alistair left, Terence pulled forth the second letter Jack had left for him. As with the first, it was marked with a specific date. As he read it, he could hear Jack's voice in his head.
Hello, Terence. I hope you're well and healing properly.
I am, he thought to himself in response. He was always amazed at just how much Jack knew.
And I'm sure you placed the Aeos de Lexion back in the safe where it should be kept.
Again, Terence felt compelled to reply to the writing. Of course, Jack.
Good. Now, unlock the safe. Someone will be stealing it shortly.
What?
He looked at the line of the letter again. Why would he allow someone to steal?
Oh, and Terence, find an excuse to send Mr. Alistair back to Rift. Most likely, that boy left something there.
Oh, great. This ought to be fun, Terence thought.
Lastly, this is my last note and message to you. When all this is finished, expect an unusual visitor. That's all. Much love, Jack.
An unusual visitor? They had a reformed demon, a boy who eats demons, and not to mention himself and Caitlin. How much stranger could they get?
Frowning, he took the key from around his neck and did as Jack asked and unlocked the safe below the coffee bar.
By his name, I hope you know. He hadn't finished his statement when he noticed an unusual light was seeping out of the safe.
That's odd, Terence said. I've only seen it glow when Jack uses it in battle.
He was tempted to take it out and examine it and decided it was just best to trust Jack and allow the sequence of events to unfold.
Later, as the evening settled in, Terence called Mr. Alistair to his room.
Can you do me a favor, Mr. Alistair?
What is it you need of me, Mr. White?
If I recall, the boy left some belongings in Rift. He's going to need them shortly.
Oh, great. I now get to be the boy's bellhop.
Sorry, I would do it, but I need to supervise a meeting.
And the boy? Who will work him when I'm gone? He is still quite lacking.
I'll have Caitlin handle it.
Alistair thought hard about it. She was a master swordsman, and she could toss a knife with an eerie accuracy.
Fine. It may be good for him to see different styles of attacks.
Yes, Terence agreed. Here's the address.
As you wish, Mr. White.
Alistair took the slip of paper with an odd curiosity. He almost felt as if they were trying to get rid of him for a few days. If so, he'd play along. They must have a good reason.
Oh, and Mr. Alistair?
Yes.
Watch the skies. I hear they can be interesting.
Now he knew he was being sent there on purpose. Terence would always tell him to watch the skies. It would be how he would send a message if something happened.
Yes, I do believe you are correct, sir.
Later that night, a very sleepy and sore Jonah Hollander was awakened from a deep sleep. He could swear someone was shaking his bed.
Mom?
No, he wasn't home. Rubbing his eyes, he looked around the room. It was empty, and unlike his bedroom at home, nothing lurked in the shadows. As a matter of fact, for the first time in his life, he was sleeping without fear.
Jonah?
Was that a voice?
Jonah?
Someone was calling to him. But unlike the things that lurked in the shadows, this voice had a reassuring, happy-to-meet-you tone. Out of habit, he looked around a second time and then swung himself out of bed. As he did so, he glanced at his left arm. To his surprise, it was glowing under the bandages.
Was this a trap? Had something evil found him again? Even here?
Jonah,
it called again.
Come downstairs. I want to meet you,
the voice insisted.
Hello?
He began to answer.
Come downstairs, it said again.
Don't be afraid. I want to meet you.
He listened to the quiet around him. Nothing stirred. No one else was moving to inspect the mysterious voice. As he walked, the wood floor felt good under his bare feet.
It was cool and soothing to the touch. He opened the door, and the wood floor creaked and groaned, but he didn't try to hide his movements. His entire body was too sore for him to care. He stopped at the top of the stairs and looked around. Had it only been 3 days? The wood floors had been completely restored, and the tarp had been replaced by a massive wood door made of hickory. Although unornated, the wood had a printed design scored into it. The workers were getting ready to carve them to look like angel wings. He surveyed the foyer. Nothing moved. The kitchen sat silent, and no one sat at the coffee bar. "Maybe I'm just dreaming," he said to himself, and turned around when again he heard the voice.
"Don't go."
"Hello?" He received no response and started to descend the stairs. As he reached the bottom, he looked around again, trying to ascertain where the voice was coming from. As he did so again, a voice beckoned. It came from behind the coffee bar.
"Come on, don't be shy," it called to him. "I want us to be friends."
He walked across to the back of the coffee bar and saw no one.
"This is so weird," he said quietly to himself.
"I'm not weird. You shouldn't be rude to people you haven't met."
I'm sorry. It's just, there's no... As he spoke, he noticed the glow coming from the safe below. That's odd, he thought to himself. The safe should be locked. Yet the door was slightly open and...
"Come on already. Open the door, will you?"
Jonah did so, but all that was there was the blade, the Deus de Lectione, a blade Terence had shown him on his very first day of training. It was beautiful, a long, silver-white blade, running about 4 feet in length with what could be described as a hammer or a key-shaped head. For some reason, it was glowing brightly and seemed to resonate with his left hand.
"Boy, that took you long enough. I was beginning to think Mr. Alistair was going to need to come and hit you in the head with me."
"Hey," Jonah said, "and you called me rude."
"Well, you said I was weird. You should be nicer to a lady when you meet her."
"Lady?"
"Yes, Oh, excuse me, Jonah. It seems we have an unexpected visitor. Can you give me a minute?"
Sure. The blade went dull, but not completely dark, and he could feel the tension in the air. Something was here, with them in the cafe. Out of instinct, Jonah went to raise his hand, but he found he was holding the blade instead. It was on fire. Nicole fell back into her seat, and the book of De Libro Atamandi Loribus slammed shut. She looked up at the Lady Cassandra.
"Well?"
She thought about what she encountered, its power, and then, of course, the boys, too.
"You tell your master that we'll be coming to visit soon, but on our terms,"
it warned her, before whatever or whoever this being was slammed her with enough energy to force her back into her body. A stark realization came to her mind. This could be the chance to supplant the High Mother, to take the mantle of power for herself. It was clear that this foe could possibly overwhelm the High Mother. Cassandra would need her gifts and her father's too to keep them in check. If she acted quickly, maybe. With that thought, Nicole quickly crafted a lie.
"It's done, Mother. That boy is a fool and easy to trick. Our trap is set. I'll make sure Father knows, and of course, I don't need to worry about my sister getting in our way."
"No, the little bitch is done."
"Good. Let us make our final arrangements. He should be here soon."
Cassandra smiled. Once the boy was theirs, he would serve as a host for Ekmalak. Then all would be brought low before him.
"Oh my, my, my. The plot thickens. There's a spirit in the sword, inside the Eus de Lection. And it's powerful enough to thwart the High Mother. And isn't that interesting, that Nicole is scheming to supplant her? Not to mention, we now have a clearer picture of why the Lady Cassandra is so interested in Jonah. She wants to use him as a new host for her master, Ekmalak, the Lord of the Waste.
But before we get to all of that, before we begin to wrap this puppy up and head to a fantastic, exciting conclusion, we need to know who is the spirit in the sword. I don't recall anyone mentioning that before, I guess we'll find that out next Tentacle Tuesday. Chapter 17, The Girl, The Guardian, and The Archangel, Mikal.